This is Passing Judgment, a podcast about the law and how it affects you. I'm your host, Loyola Law School professor Jessica Levinson. Think of me as your personal law professor as we navigate the big legal questions of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers. Hey, everybody, it's Jessica, and I want to talk about a couple of cases that are happening in Chicago right now. I want to talk about the recent ICE raids in Chicago, what's happening in response to ICE agents being there. There's a case ongoing. I also want to talk about the president's decision to send in the National Guard and talk a little bit about where the challenges to that decision currently are. But I want to start by talking about a case involving a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agent who fatally shot somebody in September in Franklin Park. And there's a reporter who's been covering all of this. I'm so grateful that she's here to talk to us, Renee Hickman, a reporter at Reuters. Renee, thank you so much for being here and for passing judgment with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I want to get later to the questions of what's happening generally with ICE agents on the ground and when the president decided to send in the National Guard. But first, can you tell us about this fatal shooting that I believe occurred on September 12th that you've been covering?
Yeah. So in, I guess, still the most violent incident since the start of what the Trump administration termed Operation Midway Blitz, which is this stepped up immigration enforcement action in Chicago and the surrounding area, has been the shooting of Silverio Villegas Gonzalez. Was a 38-year-old Mexican national who had been living in the U.S. for about 18 years. And so, you know, he was a father of two. He was a cook at a local restaurant, and he was on the way from dropping off his children at a local elementary school and a daycare. And he was stopped by ICE agents shortly afterwards. And then, you know, we've been, you know, working to piece together what happened after that point. We know that he was shot by one of the ICE agents and killed. We know that one of the ICE agents had an injury from the interaction, and it gets a bit fuzzy after that. DHS said that basically Mr. Villegas Gonzalez drove his car at the agents, that the agents were fearing for their lives, and that was why they the agent fired his weapon at Villegas Gonzalez. But, you know, when we reviewed police records and police body cam footage from responding police officers in the area, what we saw was ICE agents saying that their injuries were nothing major. And when we looked at surveillance video from nearby businesses, what we saw was a car that looked like it was driving away from the two agents that had stopped Mr. Villegas Gonzalez. So it's obviously a tragedy that, you know, this person and this father passed away. But it's also, you know, it was the first in a number of incidents in which the narrative being put out by DHS about some of these more violent interactions that have happened between area residents and federal agents has been called into question.
So Mr. Villegas Gonzalez was somebody who Customs Enforcement felt was not in this country legally, that he should be detained. And then there's, we don't know exactly what happened as a result of their interaction, other than that there was a fatal shooting and a tragedy. And it seems like there are vastly different accounts of what happened. Am I getting that part right? And could you tell us, is there news on where the investigation is in this case? I know criminal charges haven't been brought.
Right. And I should say it was actually ICE agents in this particular case. There's been other shootings that I can talk about also that involved Border Patrol agents. But so at this point, there's no criminal investigation. We reached out to DHS to see if there was going to be some kind of internal investigation. We were told that they would do an internal investigation after the first responding agency did theirs. We believe that should be the FBI, but since we've reached out to the FBI, they've told us they can't comment because of the ongoing government shutdown. We're a little bit in the dark as to what kind of accountability there will be, if any, for what happened on that day.
And is there anything else that you want people to understand about this case? It sounds like it was the most violent interaction we've seen between ICE agents and somebody that they were attempting to detain. Are there other similar incidents?
Yeah. So we have another incident of Border Patrol agents shooting a woman. Her name is Marimar Martinez. She was following Border Patrol agents. She was part of one of the neighborhood, response groups, I suppose, who attempt to warn neighbors and bystanders when there are immigration enforcement officials in the area. And so, again, we've got, very different accounts from her attorney now and from DHS. Basically, DHS says that she was following them and rammed their car with her vehicle, and they shot her in self-defense. I think they shot her 5 times. I don't think that's in dispute. And her attorney says that, in fact, the federal agent's vehicle rammed Ms. Martinez's vehicle, and that they, were not reacting to any threat on their lives. And so she's actually had criminal charges brought against her for impeding, the actions of the federal officers, using her car as a deadly weapon. We're waiting now to see the body cam footage that her attorney says, kind of disproves that DHS narrative. And so we should be learning more in the coming weeks and months about what happened there. But it's been clear that immigration enforcement agents in Chicago and the surrounding areas during this operation are, quite willing to use lethal force during these raids.
And what members of the federal government are saying, whether DHS, Border Patrol, ICE agents, is that that level of force was necessary and appropriate given the circumstances. And the victims and the victims' families are saying, no, the facts are in dispute. It wasn't necessary. Is that an accurate description of where we are in terms of the investigations?
Yeah, that's correct.
And when it comes to these cases, remind us, it sounds like there is some body cam footage. Do we know how much that body cam footage actually shows? I think that's probably an impossible question, given that you haven't seen it yet, but there are certainly reports that it exists and seemingly would help shed light on where the truth lies.
Yeah, in that case, like I said, I haven't seen it yet. It hasn't been released. It's under protective order. The attorney in that case says that basically you can see what's happening from the perspective of, inside the Customs and Border Protection vehicle. And so you get a perspective on what the agents were doing inside that car, what they were seeing. There will still be questions, I'm sure, even after it comes out. But I think that it should shed a lot of light on what's happening. And I think that, that's kind of critical because, one of the issues that people in Chicago have been having with these raids and the protests and the agents' responses to those incidents is that they aren't always wearing body cams. So we often don't know what was happening from those agents' perspective.
And Is there a legal requirement to wear body cams in those situations, or is it a public desire to understand more about what's happening?
Yeah, there is now. So as part of the temporary restraining order that Judge Sarah Ellis has put into place, immigration enforcement agents in the city are now supposed to be wearing body cameras. And so that was largely in response to some of these incidents where people have been killed or injured as part of these raids.
So there was a period of time where the body cams were not required.
Right.
They are now required, but there are some complaints that they're not always being worn. Is that the state of affairs right now?
That's correct. And when the head of this operation for Customs and Border Protection, Gregory Vivino, was in court earlier this week, he said that many of the agents now have body cameras. He said there were issues with people getting adequate training to use them. And in a very striking moment in the exchange between him and the judge, she asked him actually if he had a body camera, and he said he did not, and he had not had any training in how to use one. And so she asked him to change that situation.
And that's part of the reason why, as I think we'll talk about, it sounds like daily judicial oversight in that case where federal agents are, I can't remember of a similar case, forced to check in with a federal judge is it every day, every work day? What does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, the order was every day at 5:45, every weekday. Bovino did ask as part of the hearing if weekends would be included. She said no. So yeah, that is the idea, is basically to talk with her about any use of force incidents that had happened during that day, and you know, whether they had been justified, whether warnings had been given, what the circumstances were. It was quite remarkable, and Vivino himself seemed quite surprised by her statement at that time. But of course, you know, now the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has stayed that order, so we don't know if these hearings are going to move forward in the future or not.
One of the many legal issues that is now up in the air. So, Renee, I think that brings us to talking maybe generally about what's happening on the ground with respect to the ICE raids.
Yeah. So yes, ICE agents are certainly on the ground here at the moment. They're carrying out raids every day throughout the city and the Chicago suburbs. That started in kind of early September when what the Trump administration has termed Operation Midway Blitz began. And since then, we've seen increasingly aggressive actions by both ICE and Border Patrol agents throughout the city.
So, Renee, we know that ICE agents are on the ground and they're enforcing federal immigration law as part of the Trump administration's desire to be much stricter in the enforcement of immigration law. Can you talk to us a little bit more about the reaction that you're seeing in Chicago? Could you tell us, where are these enforcements generally taking place? Are there more surprise raids? Do people know where ICE agents are going to be? And what is the general reaction been?
So yeah, I mean, they have been all over the city. They have been concentrated largely on the south side, on, you know, the west side of the city, and in suburbs, areas with large immigrant populations, lots of low income areas. But they have also stretched into places like Lincoln Park, which are, you know, very high income neighborhoods. But, you know, regardless of where they've shown up, the community reaction has been to, you know, really monitor their presence, try to warn neighbors. There are rapid response groups that basically, you know, try to follow them throughout the day and figure out where they are to warn people. They have these little plastic whistles that they blow when they see ICE vehicles or Customs and Border Protection vehicles in a neighborhood. And that's almost become a symbol of the kind of local resistance to the immigration enforcement actions. But yeah, and then the protests and the kind of community response around those raids has resulted in federal agents then, you know, responding in ways like throwing tear gas in residential neighborhoods or out into traffic.
So it How can you talk to us a little bit? And again, I apologize. I just don't have a good sense of where there might be protests versus violence and how big these protests versus violent events may be and how often they're occurring.
Yeah, I mean, they've been occurring on a fairly regular basis, I would say. I mean, in September, early October, and actually even into now, there have been protests around an immigration detention facility in Broadview, which is a suburb of Chicago. That was kind of the focal point for many of those protests. They were pretty small, and they continue to be small. I think, you know, at the largest, maybe a couple hundred people. So it's pretty surprising to, you know, have seen federal agents then tear gassing protesters, shooting pepper balls off the roofs of buildings at, you know, what is a pretty small group of protesters. And, you know, the protests that gather around these raids are also pretty small, and they're mostly composed of, you know, neighbors who come out of their buildings in order to, you know, blow whistles and kind of register their discontent with what's happening. So that is one of the remarkable things about the federal agents' reactions to these protests.
So, Renee, we know there's a couple of cases that are ongoing. Let's focus on one of them, which deals with ICE agents and Border Patrol agents, as I understand, and judicial oversight of those agents. I think something somewhat rare is happening in this case where there's daily federal oversight of what's going on, or I should say daily judicial oversight. Could you talk to us a little bit about what the claims were in this case? Who are the plaintiffs, and where are we right now in this case?
Sure. So, you know, there's been a lawsuit basically by protesters, journalists, clergy members, basically about the use of force against them since the beginning of Operation Midway Blitz. And there has been a temporary restraining order in place that federal agents may have violated in a number of occasions. So we had the Border Patrol Commander at Large, Gregory Bovino, coming into federal court and kind of being chastised by Judge Sarah Ellis for the federal agents that he, you know, oversees using force against protesters as part of these raids and in protests, and also personally deploying tear gas at people in, you know, what appeared to be a peaceful protest, right? And, you know, not warning the protesters beforehand before the tear gas was thrown. And so, you know, she talked a lot about one incident also where basically tear gas was deployed in a neighborhood that affected children that were going to a Halloween parade, and the kind of traumatic effects that that might have on them for years to come afterwards. And then after that hearing, she asked Bovino to come in basically every day at 6 o'clock, 5:45, 6 o'clock to, you know, explain any kind of use of force incidents that had happened during the previous day. So now, you know, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has stayed that order. And so we don't know if it's going to happen, if we're going to get these hearings that that Ellis ordered. But that'll be an interesting thing to watch going forward.
Okay, so we have that case where there's a temporary restraining order regarding how federal agents are enforcing federal law. And we know that part of that is pending before the circuit. There's another case dealing with the National Guard. Could you lay the framework for us a little bit in terms of reminding us when the National Guard was sent in? I know that case is also up on appeal. I'll talk about that a little bit. But again, could you refresh our recollection for when and why the National Guard was sent into Chicago?
Yeah, so the National Guard troops were sent in, and they're, I think, stationed right now outside the city of Chicago. They have not been deployed yet because of the ongoing, you know, legal challenge. But, you know, the idea from the Trump administration was that Chicago is so uncontrollably crime-ridden that basically National Guard troops needed to come in order to keep the peace. But, you know, so far they have not been deployed.
Got it. So what I think we've seen replicate in Chicago and has happened in many other jurisdictions is that ICE agents come in and start arresting and detaining people. There's then a response to those ICE agents, some peaceful protests, some violence of varying degrees. The president then invokes his power under a statute called 12406 to federalize the National Guard. He has the power to do so if one of three things occurs. One is an invasion that's not on the table. Another is a rebellion or danger of rebellion. And a third is whether or not the president is unable to execute the law through the normal forces. So I understand that there is also a challenge to the president's decision to invoke that statute and federalize the National Guard, and that this case is actually not only up on appeal before the Seventh Circuit, but that part of that temporary restraining order that was implemented as a result of this case is actually being directly appealed to the Supreme Court. So we'll have a separate episode where I talk in a lot more detail about that. But basically, there's an emergency appeal up before the Supreme Court where the Trump administration is asking the court to lift part of a temporary restraining order that would prevent National Guard troops from being deployed in Chicago. Renee, you've covered so much of what's been going on in Chicago with respect to the ICE agents, the National Guard, and I am wondering if there's something that you wish we understood better about what's happening on the ground. I know it can be difficult, particularly if we're not there, to kind of get a handle on what people's daily lives are like.
I think the most striking thing to me has been the kind of surreal contrast between daily life in Chicago and the kind of violence, honestly, of these raids that have taken place very suddenly in residential areas, in areas with, you know, businesses. And I think, you know, that's always very strange to me. On the one hand, looking at footage of these incidents in, they've happened in my neighborhood, they've happened in neighborhoods that I spend a lot of time in. And so I think that, yeah, having that awareness that almost one of these situations could happen at any time is very, very unsettling for a lot of people here in Chicago.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I wanted to start winding down our conversation by asking, could you tell us a little bit about, I know this is a new beat for you, you were previously covering agriculture. Could you talk to us a little bit about what a day in the life looks like for you?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I've been monitoring kind of reports that come in from our visual colleagues who are out every day trying to see what ICE and what the Border Patrol agents are doing and where they're going. And then I'm, you know, looking at what happens after these raids, what kind of social media videos come out, because people are very ready to kind of get to these scenes and tape them and record what's going on. That's been one of the kind of pushes from responder groups, is to try to get people to record as much of these interactions as they can. So often you'll see lots of people around a raid with cameras. And so I try to get access to whatever footage was shot. Afterwards, I'll be talking to people who witnessed the raids and the protests, to local businesses, and interviewing people and interviewing local officials, and, you know, just trying to get a good sense of what actually happened, and then comparing that often to very different narratives that come out of DHS. So yeah, that's been pretty much my daily routine since September.
Well, that's a lot. And given that, I'm very grateful that you could spend some time with us and talk us through what's happening in Chicago, particularly being based in Los Angeles. It's very helpful for me to try and get out of the court filings and figure out what's happening on the ground. So, Renee Hickman of Reuters, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.